Right.
Not until you leave a letter signed with your correction. But it's more than that. See, obviously, when the letter signed with your correction, you get the purpose of fire flow, what the objective of fire flow is. But this really shows you that the nation can't be destroyed through any political, means. That's a different, it's just like our and all the greatness of Tom Israel, you look through, you see that's what he's saying. Kesophos Rain, Kel Motim, Ryan Kesophos Rain, well, it all discusses the unique nature of this nation, its relationship to God, its unique relationship to God. So really, Bilam was a person that embarked on a political course, and the result was that he ultimately wound up on a metaphysical course. That's really what it was. That's part of the sin. Right. Only because it's part of Sipra Maisa. But the Sipra Maisa belongs there. It belongs to Sipra Maisa. The Sipra Maisa brings in the Nevoah. And then it brings in the incense to bring in the Nevoah. And that's why that Nevoah became part of Kunshan Shah. But it wasn't that. See? That's what it means. That's what it was. Now, I just want you to know. The reason why I have a Sipra Maisa is because the whole Sipra Maisa of the Torah is basically how the Sipra Maisa of Hashgach. It shows God's Hashgach. And it shows the particular dimension. This is a major thing. This was a big, major task. You could have looked at that. Could have been a choir. See? So what happened? So that's why you have to have that's where the story belongs here. Just the fact that the Hashgacha worked on his emotions is not an unusual thing. It's just like the Hashgacha worked by Achashverosh. Well, I don't know. That's not familiar. It's also Hashgacha. Ramban says that the Hashgacha works many times. That's what Ramban, I think, says. That that's the basic way the Hashgacha works. Okay, I just wanted to do one thing. It's before Hashanah. I just wanted to do one short. I mean, while we're in the Inyan, you see the whole idea of the existence of the Klal. Basically, Rosh Hashanah is a day of Tefillah, and it's the idea of Malchus. Malchus HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Of course, a person has to be misspelled for himself, for his own personal well-being. I mean, no question about it. He's concerned about it. He has a right to misspell for it. But you have to remember, I mean, the essence of the Tefillah, so if you take a look at the Tefillah, the essence of the Tefillah really do not mention personal things. The Malchus should be destroyed. You see, the whole essence of the Tefillah and the Malchus and the Zechrinus and the Shefres and the Shefres Gilus Shchina, the whole essence of the Tefillah really is for the Klal. A person should have a mind when he davens on Rosh Hashanah. I mean, it ties in very nicely with the concept of the existence of Klal Yisrael. He should have a mind something beyond his own egocentricity. When he's mispowered, he must have in mind, if he has any level of existence, he has to have in mind to be mispowered for the Klal. That the Klal should be able to see better times when there's more knowledge, more Chokhmas Hashem, and where the system could be carried out and could be lived to the utmost, and that all people should recognize the Kadosh Baruch Hu. A person can't be selfish about it. He always has to have a concern for other people. And that's really, if you look at the Tefillahs, you see all the Tefillahs are written that way. And most people, it's true, they just come to shul for their own personal things. But if you take a look at the Tefillahs don't mention so much about that. Most of the Tefillahs are straight, all about the Tikkun Olam. Tikkun Olam. The person has to be a little broader than his own personal needs. I'm not saying he shouldn't ask his personal needs, but he should try to raise himself to a higher level that you recognize that it's not the egocentric good that the person wants. That good is when he has something and somebody else doesn't. See? That good, that's an emotional good. He doesn't want everybody to have to have the good. That would be too disturbing. Too disturbing to his ego. He should have the good. We're special. See? That's man's egocentricity. But you should work on your emotions and overcome that emotion. Now, everybody has the emotion. You have to, like Chazal never criticized a person for having a certain emotional attitude. Like we mentioned last week, the Gemara says about a person didn't learn Torah because he was an usher. He couldn't learn Torah because he was an oni. He couldn't concentrate. He couldn't spend any time in pursuing knowledge. So the Gemara doesn't say, God doesn't criticize the person and say, what do you mean? You have what to eat? So what do you care? You're poor. What do you mean you're wealthy? You're wealthy? So what? On the contrary, you have plenty to eat. So what do you have to... Well, there's plenty of sustenance. Why do you have to involve yourself in business? No. The Torah recognizes the emotional states of a human being. The only thing the Torah asks is that a person should recognize the state. It's an emotional state, yes, but there's a way of dealing with it. You have to deal with it. So a person shouldn't deny his egocentricity, but he has to realize it comes from a base part of his nature. It's not the higher part of his nature. It's not, there's no reality there. It's just an emotion. And he has to try to rise above it, and he should be mispalel for all of Klal Yisrael that they should be zocha, and that they should be zocha, and ultimately gilui shechina, but to improve their state. And a person should realize that the true good for every yochid really is when the whole klal has the good. That's really an improvement of the good of every yochid. So I think it's important on Yom HaDin that a person should have, when he's mispalel, should have his thoughts directed in the proper direction. I mean, he shouldn't just be just follow his emotions. He should raise himself on Yom HaDin. He should realize the Kedusha Yom. That's why the tefillos are constructed that way. If you just look at the tefillos, you see the Chazal are trying to get a person in the spot for the more important things.
Okay, we're doing Parshas Tazria, and this is a summary of the analysis of by Rabbi Chait of the philosophy of the woman who gives birth and the ensuing Tum and Tahara state afterwards. We asked three basic questions. The first one was in terms of the Rashi of Ishoki Sazria, Amar Rav Simloi, Kishem Shitzi Rasa Shal Adam Achar Kol Behema Chayef Ha'ov B'maisa Breishis Kach Poroso Nisparsha Achat Torahs Behema Chayev Ha'Of. So Rabbi Samloi said, just like by the account of creation, man comes after the animal kingdom, so too when we deal with the concept of Tum and Tahara, man, halachas of man, Tumas Adam, come after the halachas of Tumas Behema, which has already been told to us previously in Parsha Shemini. The question is, it's very nice, but what is Reb Samloi teaching us here? Second question is, based on Pasuk Gimel, Uvayom Hashmini Yimol Besar Arlato. Question is, this is Hilchos Tum and Tahara of a woman who gives birth. Why is the halacha of Bris Mila part of the parasha here? And finally, why is it philosophically, if a woman gives birth, why is it first of all she becomes tamei altogether? What's the concept of tuma by a woman who gives birth? And also, there's a very strange thing here, because if you look in Pasuk Dalet, you see that the 33 days of Yemei Tahara, for instance, by a male, or in Pasuk Hey, the 66 days of the Yemei Tahara by a giving birth to a female. So the question is, why she brings the carbon, which is the final machaper, after the Yemei Tahara? The question is, this is much different than any other case of Tumah, because normally she would sit the Yemei Tumah, for instance, that's by Nida. She'd sit the Yemei Tumah, then she'd bring a carbon, then Yemei Tahara, you know, just of course, after she's gone through the process, now she's Tahar. But here, on the contrary, the Yemei Tahara are part of the process, because she's not allowed to bring the korban until after the Yemei Tahara. So her final kapara does not occur until after the Yemei Tahara. So the question is, what is the merging here of the Tum and Tahara in terms of the woman, the Hayoledes? And one last thing is, why is it that by the birth of a female that the numbers are doubled? It's 14 Yemei Tumah and 66 Yemei Tahara. We say it as follows. What Rav Samloi is trying to teach us is that God created a physical world. The question is, how does man deal with a physical world? So Rav Samloi is telling us that man deals with it via halacha. He approaches the physical world with halacha. Really, the physical world is just a means to reach the ideational world. A good example of this is Seder night, that we take the basic ingredients of man's diet, bread, a vegetable and meat, and we raise them on Pesach night to the concept of the halachic suda. So we take the physical, and we go ahead and we it becomes a we take the physical and we make it and we elevate it to the world of ideas. That's what the purpose of halacha is. More on the halachic suda, see the tape of Halach Vanya. Now, most of mankind engages in the sexual activity and in the having of children basically to satisfy his own desires, either the sexual desires and also the desire to having his own offspring, the fantasy of immortality. However, the true objective is really Kiyam Hamin, the continuing of the species, because it's God's will that there should be the species of man on this world. Schopenhauer once said that the whole reason why man has all these desires and sexual lusts is really God only did it only to fool man, that he should continue to propagate the species. Man thinks he's doing it for his own good, but really in the end it's only all that's left really is just the species. The individual dies off. The concept of Kiyam Hamin being the philosophy of Pur Avu is quite readily found in Sefer HaChinuch as well in the Rambam's works. Actually, the Torah recognizes a more specific Kiyam Hamin, and that is the Kiyam of the species of Bnei Yisrael per se, not just the species of man, but the actual continuation of Bnei Yisrael. That's a specific Kiyam Hamin. The mitzvah of Bris Mila demonstrates this philosophy. The specific covenant with the children of Abraham that they should continue to exist. As a matter of fact, that is the Nusach HaBracha, where you say, Lachniso v'briso shel Avraham. That we are, he is entering now the covenant of Abraham. The objective of having children in Judaism is not to satisfy one's own personal emotions, but it's rather to enter into the covenant of Abraham, meaning to continue the will of God that there should be a people of Israel on this world. It's very apropos why the Torah and Pasuk Gimel here mentions the concept that the male child is circumcised, to show that the whole objective of the giving birth here is not to satisfy anyone's emotions, but rather it is simply to follow the will of God, which is to perpetuate the Bnei Yisrael. The reason for the woman being tummy, for a woman being tummy here, is to show that the instinctual is involved. In fact, wherever the idea of tummy is found in the Torah, the instinctual is also found. This illustrates that the instinctual is involved.
Since we are dealing here with the tumah as a result of birth, the instinct we are dealing with is the having of children for the psychological personal reasons and not to be in line with the will of God. The tumah here reflects the instinct to have children. The state of tahara is to show the contrast, that within the same very event, a man can either approach it in an instinctual fashion, or he can approach it in the philosophical true fashion, following God's will. That is why the tahara is part of the process. It is part of the process to show that this same very event, can be approached by man in two different ways, either instinctually or in the philosophical reality. If it was not part of the process, then it would have nothing to do with the event itself. In other words, the tahara would not be a result, in other words, the state of tahara would not be a result of her giving birth, and therefore we would not relate the state of tahara to that event. Only the state of tumah would be related to that event. So therefore, on the contrary, what God did was He put the tumah and tahara as part of one process to contrast the two ways man can approach the same event, either the instinctual approach or the philosophical approach. The reason why by Nekeva all the numbers are doubled is because by a Nekeva we do not have the mitzvah of Mila. So therefore, the emphasis of this philosophy must be shown within the system of Tum and Tahara itself. By the Zohar, there is less need of an emphasis within the system of Tum and Tahara, since you also have the mitzvah of Mila, which also shows the true objective of having children. However, by a female, you do not have this. And therefore, the emphasis of this philosophy, in other words, the contrast of the a way man approaches a event is needed to be shown via the Hilchas Tum and Tahara itself. Therefore, what we really see is that Reb Simlai, really with his one statement, really opened up the whole key to the concept of the of a woman who gives birth, because basically he really gave the basic philosophy, being that, in other words, you have the physical reality and physical events that take place, and what it's important is for man to approach them with the system of ideas, with the system of halacha, and via the system of halacha and ideas, he'll come to recognize the will of God and the true way of life.